Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Okay, we have been studying the Sutta Nipata, and we are in the Himavata Sutta. And we started the sutta last week, and we saw that the sutta takes the form of a dialogue, or it opens in the form of a dialogue between two beings who are called yakshas, or in Sanskrit, yakshas. What are yakshas? Yakshas are somewhat demonic beings, as I explained, but there are different types of yakshas, different grades. And some of them have a very highly developed spiritual nature, almost a divine nature, which is just under the cover of a kind of demonic surface. And so the yakshas have a potential for spiritual awakening, for enlightenment, if they meet with the suitable conditions. And these two yakshas have that potential. One of them is named Satagira, who according to the commentary dwells in the middle region of India, and the other yaksha, after whom the sutta is named, Hemavata, dwells in the Himalayas. The two yakshas meet each other, and Satagira is a devotee, a follower of the Buddha, and he is persuading his friend Hemavata to come to see the Buddha. The dialogue that takes place between them takes the form of a discussion of the qualities of the Buddha, and so it forms almost, we can say, a little catalog of the moral qualities of the Buddha, or almost a hymn of praise to the Buddha. And the first part takes the form of establishing that the Buddha is one whose conduct completely conforms to the 10 pathways or courses of wholesome conduct. He doesn't kill, steal. He is completely pure with regard to his sensual behavior. He doesn't speak falsehood, slanderous speech, harsh speech, engage in idle chatter, and his mind is completely free from any covetousness, from all ill will, and he is free from all delusion. Further questioning establishes that he is endowed with knowledge, true knowledge, and right conduct, that he has destroyed all of the asavas, the passions, the taints, the influxes that keep beings bound through beginningless time to the cycle of rebirth. And because he has destroyed all of these asavas, these influxes, taints or passions, he has achieved in this very life liberation from the cycle of rebirths. Okay, so this is what we covered in last week's discourse. We will continue now from verse 12 okay, after Satagira has confirmed that the Buddha is free from all rebirths, then Hemavata confirms this, and he says, the sage's mind is filled with good speech and action. He possesses right knowledge and conduct. Let's go and see Gotama. Then apparently they are approaching him, and Hemavata describes him. He says, Aini jangang kisang di rang, apa aharang alolupang, muning vanasmin jayantang, ehi pasama gotamang. The sage Gotama, limbed like the antelope, lean, firm, taking little food, not greedy. The sage meditating in the jungle. Come, let us go and see Gotama. Then he continues, Si hung ve ka charang nagang kame suana pekinang upasan kama puchama machu pasapamochanang. Having approached him who, like a lion, lives alone. Actually, the Buddha is usually surrounded by large groups of people, monks, nuns, often groups of lay followers, kings, kings' ministers. But still, even in that situation, the Buddha often seeks the opportunity to go wandering alone. He is indifferent to worldly pleasures, to sensual pleasures. And now, in this verse, he announces what's going to be the theme of his questions. Machu pasa pamochanang, the escape or liberation from the snare of death. So he's going to take us right to the very heart of the most, call it the most urgent question, at the very heart of the human condition. For we all find ourselves bound to this process of becoming, by which we are moving constantly towards old age, sickness, and death. And in the Buddhist perspective, this process of growing old, falling sick, and dying is one which is repeated over and over through beginningless time. And here, death, the machu, this word can also signify the lord of death, machu raja, that is Mara. Death is conceived of as a being, the evil one who sets a trap, a snare, by which he controls the entire universe of deluded, ignorant beings who are in his trap and move from birth, enjoying life, then falling sick, growing old, dying again and again. And only a few recognize the misery in this, the danger, and seek a way to deliverance, a way to escape. And those who seek an escape often cannot find one. But the one who awakens to the way to liberation, the one who by himself finds the way to liberation and teaches the way to liberation, that is the Buddha. And so now these two yakas, these two demonic beings, perhaps they are beings who have a strong divine nature, but because they have been born into this demonic world, they experience the frustration of not being able to fully realize that potential divine nature. So they experience this suffering and now come to the Buddha seeking a way to deliverance. And so they come and they address him very beautiful words. Akatarang pavatarang sabadamana paragung budang vera bayatitang mayang puchama gotamang. Okay, in verse 15, not well translated. Okay. But it's difficult to translate. Okay, we ask Gotama. These two words, he translates, who expounds the Dhamma, who declares the Dhamma, who expounds the Dhamma, the two words, akatarang, apavatarang. Akatarang is one who expounds, one who declares. Pavatarang is one who causes to act, one who guides, you could say, one who incites to action. And we might see these two words as corresponding to the two aspects of the Buddha's teaching, Dhamma and Vinaya. Dhamma is the doctrine. And so the Buddha, as the expounder, is the one who declares the Dhamma, the doctrine. The one who guides, the one who incites to action, the one who instructs in the right course of action, is the one who teaches Vinaya, not in the narrower sense of the Buddhist monastic rules, but in the wider sense of the practice or path to be followed to realize the truth of the Dhamma. And then we come to this very profound expression, Sabba Dhammana Paragung. The translator simply has, who has realized all truth, but it actually means the one who has gone to the far shore of all phenomena. Para comes from the image of a river. There is the near shore, Ora, and the far shore, Para. And we say in between are all the phenomena of the world. And all of us are on this shore. Well, I think all of us. Maybe there are a few exceptions amongst you. Excuse me. But the Buddha is the one who is gone to the far shore, who has reached nirvana, nibbana, gone beyond all conditioned things. And then the Buddha is described as one who has overcome all enmity or hatred and fear. Okay, and now Hemavatta is going to ask his questions. And these are going to be very profound questions because they're dealing with a very important, very profound theme, the escape from the snares of death, the trap of death. Okay, so Hemavatta asks, kismin loko samupano kismin kubati santavang kisa loko upadaya kismin loko vihanyati. In what has the world arisen? With what is the world intimate? After having clung to what, or I would just translate more simply, clinging to what does the world stand? By what is the world troubled? And then the Buddha answers. I'll take the question and answer together. The answer is in the form of a riddle. Chasu loko samupano chasu kubati santavang chanam eva upadaya chasu loko vihanyati. O Hemavata, in six has the world originated, or is the world produced. With six is it intimate. Having clung to six, the world stands. By six, the world is troubled. Okay, to understand this verse, we have to begin by raising the question, what is meant by the world? Okay, if we ask this question in our ordinary understanding, we think, okay, the world is my everyday world. It's my home, my wife and kids, my job, my friends, my social routine. That's my world. That is the world. Okay, if you answer in that way, somebody will say, maybe that's your world, but that's a very narrow view of the world. You have to break out of that narrow little eggshell and see the world. Travel a little. Go to France. See the Eiffel Tower. See Paris. Go to Germany. See the great Gothic cathedrals. Go to Spain. Go to India. See the Taj Mahal. See the Great Wall of China. Go to Niagara Falls. That's the world. Okay, but when you reflect, what is it that makes up this world? Really, what is there? Analyze it, examine it in terms of what actually makes it up. And the Buddha says, if you have the printed pages in front of you, I will teach you the all. Listen and attend closely, I will speak. And what is the all? The eye and forms, the ear and sounds, the nose and odors, the tongue and tastes, the body and tactile objects, the mind and mental phenomena. This is called the all, the everything. So that is the all, the world. Okay, somebody says, I will reject this all, I will make known another all. We are developing space technology now. Super high-powered telescopes. So enough with your traveling around the Earth to different countries and saying, that's the all. Look through this telescope, Hubble telescope, the pictures of the Hubble telescope, now Palomar telescope. You see galaxies light years away. Look through the telescope. You see superclusters of galaxies, millions of light years away. Even you see quasars and objects at the edge of the universe, the edge of the known universe, 15 billion light years away. This is the world. But even though we see these things, even though we might develop in the future technologies that will take us there, no matter where we travel, what we are experiencing are forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile objects, coordinating all of that data through the mind and fashioning mental phenomena, ideas. And we are doing all of this through eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And so, no matter where we might be, there's a sutta where the Buddha is talking to one deva who has traveled throughout the whole universe and has never been able to come to the end of the universe. And yet, wherever he goes, he is just experiencing sight, sound, smells, taste, tactile objects, and ideas. Okay, then some yogi might be speaking to this astrophysicist and says, what you show me through your telescope, you think that that is something fantastic and spectacular. You're seeing galaxies light years away, but all of that is still within the plane of this level of physical vibration. But I can use my divine eye to see deva worlds, Brahma worlds, to see realms of ghosts, realms of spirits, hell realms that you cannot see. And that is the world. But in all of these realms, from the highest heavenly realms, highest Brahma realms, down to the lowest hell realms, what is there? Form, sound, smells, tastes, tactile objects, all of that being coordinated, formed into meaningful wholes by the mind, worked up into mental phenomena. So that is the all. Six sense objects, six sense faculties. How does this all originate? Where does it come from? Are we just thrown into this by chance? Is it something divinely created? How does it come to be? This is what the Buddha has discovered. Paragraph 107. And this is the answer to the first question of Hemavata. Monks, here I'm just dealing with the origin. I will teach you the origin of the world. Listen and attend closely, I will speak. And what, monks, is the origin of the world? Independence on the I and forms, I consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact, with contact as condition, failing comes to be. With failing as condition, there is craving. With craving as condition, there is clinging. With clinging as condition, we engage in actions. We engage in different types of volitional actions which generate karma that builds up the potential for new existence. That karma projects a new existence in the future. That new existence brings birth. And with birth as condition, there is aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair. That is the origin of the world. And so for the ear and sounds, the nose and odors, tongue and tastes, body and tactile objects, the mind and mental phenomena. Through each of these senses, when the sense faculty, sense object come together, the appropriate consciousness arises, then a series of events takes place through consciousness that will eventually lead to feeling. Through feeling, there can be a response of craving. When craving arises, grasping after that feeling, usually clinging to pleasant feeling, running away or pushing away painful feeling, engaging in manipulations of painful and pleasant feeling, then one builds up the conditions that generate new existence in the future. The arising of a new world that will be the counterpart, the appropriate counterpart for our own karmic dispositions. And that is the creation of a world that is the appropriate world for our own consciousness, the reflection, the counterpart of our own mind, our own deepest tendencies. And that is the origin of the world. And once we are situated in that world, then we develop, as the sutta says, we develop intimacy with the world. We experience new forms, new sounds. We meet with new people, develop close relationships with them. And then through liking of pleasant things, enjoying pleasant people, we again create new ties, new bonds that tie us to this world and lay the foundation for the bringing into being of a new world. And so, in terms of the six senses, we can say that this world continues, stands, clinging to the six sense objects through the six sense faculties. But what is the consequence of this? That is what the Buddha teaches in numerous discourses. One of the most sharpest and pointed is called the Fire Sermon. This is passage 28. Monks, all is burning. And what is the all that is burning? The eye is burning, forms are burning, eye consciousness is burning, eye contact is burning, and whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, pleasant, painful, or neutral feeling, that too is burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of lust or greed. Burning with the fire of hatred, anger, aversion. Burning with the slow, smoldering fire of delusion or ignorance, burning with birth, old age and death, burning with sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair. And so, in the case of the ear, nose, tongue, body, also the mind is burning, mental phenomena are burning, mind consciousness is burning, mind contact is burning, feeling through the mind is burning, burning with the fires of greed, lust, craving, burning with the fires of hatred, cruelty, anger, aversion, burning with that smoldering fire of delusion or ignorance, burning with birth, old age and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair. So, for this reason, the Buddha says that it is through six, or within the six, that the world is troubled. The world is harassed. Okay, after the Buddha answered this question, the Yaka Hemavata asked him another question. Kata mangtang upadanang yata loko vihanyati niyanang pujito bruhi katang dukha pamuchati. Here I don't quite, I agree with the commentary rather than with the translation, which takes the word upadana here not in the sense of clinging or attachment, but as the base or foundation. What is that foundation or base wherein the world is harassed or troubled? I'm asking you, but please tell us the means of deliverance. How does the world escape from suffering? How is the world released from dukkha, from misery or from suffering? Then the Buddha gives a very deep and very subtle reply. He says, pancha kama guna loke mano chata pavedita eta chandang virajetva evang dukha pamuchati. Okay, I translate this on my own. Okay, there are five cords of sensual pleasure in the world. Mind is declared to be their sixth. Having made desire fade away here, it is thus one is released from suffering. Okay, these five cords or five kinds of sensual pleasure are pleasurable and delightful forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile objects. And now this is why the Buddha's answer is especially clever. He says, mind is declared to be their sixth. But actually, the mind is not the sixth cord of sensual pleasures. The mind is the sixth internal sense base. So this implies something significant. What it implies is that when the five external sense objects are mentioned, to get mind as the sixth, one has to bring in the five internal sense bases, the five sense faculties. That means we have to bring in the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. Then the mind becomes their sixth. But when we mention form, sound, smells, taste, and touches, to complete that sequence as the counterpart to mind as the sixth, we have to bring in its object, which are mental phenomena. And so in this way, the Buddha is bringing in, through this verse, all 12 sense bases. He's bringing in the all, the world, distributed into the 12 sense bases. And this all is comprised, actually constitutes the noble truth of suffering. Because when we see the internal sense bases and the external sense bases, when we see them correctly, then we will see that they are really dukkha, unsatisfactory. So, with this first half of the verse, the Buddha is referring to the first noble truth, the noble truth of suffering. Then the second part of the verse, having made desire fade away here, thus one is liberated from suffering. The Buddha is actually implicitly bringing in the other three noble truths. Chanda, desire, is a synonym for craving, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. The fading out of craving is the third noble truth, the truth of the cessation of suffering. And getting released from suffering by making desire fade out implies the method to make desire fade out, which is the noble eightfold path, culminating in the insight, wisdom, that eradicates that craving. And what is that insight wisdom? On the sheets that I gave out, paragraph 26. Actually, we could skip over 26 and come to the selection number 147 to 149. It is seeing the 12 sense bases as impermanent, as suffering, as not self. The Buddha says, I will teach you the way for attaining Nibbana. Listen. And what is the way for attaining Nibbana? Here, a monk sees the eye as impermanent. He sees forms as impermanent. He sees eye consciousness as impermanent. He sees everything that follows from eye consciousness as impermanent. And so for the ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. He sees the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, and so on as dukkha, as suffering. Third paragraph, he sees the eye He sees forms. He sees eye consciousness as not self. Eye contact is not self. And so on, all the ways down to mind, mind objects, mind consciousness. Everything that follows from mind consciousness, he sees as not self. That is the way suitable for attaining Nibbana. And so when one sees everything in this way, then one arrives at what is called the direct knowing and full understanding of the all. That is what is spoken of in paragraph 26. And by directly knowing and fully understanding the all, one develops dispassion towards the all, detachment from the all, and thereby one is capable of destroying suffering, of gaining this complete liberation from suffering. And therefore the Buddha now in verse 172 or verse 20, he says, Etaṃ loka sa niyānaṃ akātaṃ vo yathātataṃ Etaṃ vo ahaṃ akāmi evaṃ dukkhapamuccati. This is the release or liberation from the world. Exactly as it is, I have told it to you. This alone I tell you, it is in this way that the world is released from suffering. Okay, this will complete this much of the discourse for today. Next time, this will be on October 8th, then I will complete the explanation of the Hemavata discourse. I thank you all for your attention, and I wish the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you all. Okay, now we will do the sharing of the merits. Akasata Chabumata Devanaga Mahitika Punyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Sasanang Akasata Chabumata Devanaga Mahitika Punyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Desanang Akasata Chabumata Devanaga Mahitika Punyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Mang Parang Etavata Cha Amehi Sampadang Punya Sampadang Sabe Deva Anumodantu Sabha Sampati Siddhya Etavata Cha Amehi Sampadang Punya Sampadang Sabe Bhuta Anumodantu Sabha Sampati Siddhya Etavata Cha Amehi Sampadang Punya Sampadang Sabe Sata Anumodantu Sabha Sampati Siddhya.